This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann. I'm in Otifoti, Dunedin at Otago Polytechnic, Te Pūkenga, still Te Pūkenga today. And I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. Tell me about your exciting weekend.
Oh my gosh, it was so good. So we took three teams of rangatahi to Christchurch for the National Aquabots Tournament. And we had one of our teams came third, and we're pretty sure that the other team, one of the other teams, came fourth. Lots of learning from the experience. Not all of it good learning. Some things need tidying up with the way the tournament runs. But in terms of the experience that our kids had, they came home really happy and excited, really proud of themselves. And I saw a new level of resilience in them that blew my mind.
How did the presentation in Te Reo go?
Oh, Jack was amazing. He's got this incredible teacher at school, Whaehima, and she just brings out the best in him. And so she had prepared him so well, and he was so confident. And he actually speaks more confidently in Māori than he does in English, because he's an introvert. So when he speaks in Māori, he takes on almost a different persona.
Yeah, how did the competition cope with the presentation in Te Reo?
They actually had a dedicated Māori judge.
Wow.
Yeah, which was, that was pretty blooming cool.
Oh, I hope they didn't have to scramble, but I can imagine that they did have to scramble to find one, and that's good for them.
And I think they must have had a heads up, because that judge was flat out all day, so there were quite a few, because in North Island schools really common to have kura kaupapa, rūmaki kind of classes. So yeah, becoming more our normal despite the best efforts of the incoming government.
And who are we introducing today?
It is my great pleasure to introduce my new favourite author, filmmaker, writer, Bill Morris. Welcome, Bill. Thanks for joining us today.
Kia ora, Mawera and Samuel. Thank you for having me on the show.
Bill, we've been asking people how their lockdown was, and now it's seriously turned into history, but we'll start with that anyway. How was your lockdown?
Lockdown was it was a busy time. I was writing the book that Mawera was talking about. So that took up a lot of my time, and I guess I'm a freelancer, so I do freelance writing and filmmaking, and so certainly the writing side of that just carried on through lockdown. So it wasn't really it was just really life as usual for me for the most part.
Was writing the book a thing that was happening anyway?
I had planned to write that book during the year.
But the book tells the story of the science of Gondwanaland. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So the book is called The Road to Gondwana, and it tells the story of the supercontinent Gondwana and its formation and its breakup. It tells the story of plants that lived on it, and particularly one particular plant that evolved into a forest that existed on Gondwana, and the fossils of that forest are really what led scientists to understand or to deduce the existence of Gondwana. So it's the story of that fossil, but it's also the story of the supercontinent. It's a story of great environmental change, particularly climate change. And it's, I guess there's a forewarning in that story for our modern times.
We're working with a learner on telling stories as a means to engage management in perspectives that they would otherwise would be taboo. So things like racism and misogyny. And so one of the things that we're doing is trying to reduce stories down to a single nugget and then expanding them out by rewriting them in a whole pile of different genres. And one of the ones that we're trying to write, he is trying to write, is writing through the perspective of something that's more than human, as in not human. And just recently we've been trying to get ChatGPT to do it, just to see if it tells, just out of interest, does it tell different stories to the ones that we're writing? And we found the limitation. We cannot convince it to write stories through the perspective of a tree.
So interesting.
So did you set out to write this through the perspective of the fossil?
That's probably a bit strong. I didn't seek to give the fossil a voice, so to speak. I guess it was just following the fossil through time and following the path that the trees had evolved in. But I hope to give it some personality. I wanted to give people a sense of that fossil as a living organism, and what it would have experienced in terms of climate and ecology at that time, 300 million years ago. So there are sections in the book where I really wanted to try and bring that to life, and I guess in a sense to put the reader in the perspective, in the shoes, so to speak, of the tree and what it was experiencing. So, I guess to an extent, I did try to give that particular tree, that particular organism, a personality, and try and understand what it experienced. But very interesting that the AI was not able to do that. I guess it's something that that anthropomorphism of idea of trying to put ourselves in the position of another living thing that's not human is perhaps a particularly human skill at the moment.
So how did you tell a story that was gripping, compelling on geological timescales? Because on human timescales, it would be, page one, nothing happened. Page two, still nothing happened. Page three, nothing's happened this 10,000 years either.
Exactly. Yeah. Geology is, we look around the world and think of it as static, really, because we don't see geological changes happening. And we don't see major geological changes happening before our eyes. But the fact is, of course, that, geology happens in across vast timescales. And when you're writing a book, you're able to speed those time frames up, put everything in ultra fast forward motion, I suppose you could say. And suddenly what that does is that suddenly the geology comes to life, because suddenly the surface of the planet becomes a dynamic, violent, constantly changing place, with all kinds of drama unfolding, mountains being continents crashing into one another, mountains being thrust up, volcanoes erupting, and huge chemical changes, happening on a geological time frame. The fun thing about this, writing a geology book, is being able to fast forward all that and try and bring it to life in kind of a way that tells it like an action story, which it is, just happening on far greater timescales than we can sort of imagine. And that's really interesting and really fun. And I cover this in the book, but coming to that understanding was really a fundamental development in the evolution of geology as a science, because it was that kind of fundamental click in our understanding that, even though even though we don't see mountain ranges being thrust up before our eyes, that this is happening, and this understanding of this huge amount of time that's preceded us on this planet, that idea is fundamental to really modern geology. So I cover that in the book as well.
If we go forwards, does it though tell a message that what we do doesn't really matter?
You could look at it that way. You know, at the end of the day, in another 300 million years, this planet will still be here. Most likely it'll be covered in life forms, plants and animals, that will bear no resemblance to us, and will most likely be forgotten. And all the damage that we've done to the planet will most likely be rectified by the planet itself. This is another aspect I look at in the book, is that the planet has checks and balances that that operate on these geological time scales. And really, you know, the interesting thing when you're talking about climate and atmosphere is that it's plants that are driving this. So plants have a way of regulating the atmosphere, not in any kind of conscious way, but just through natural kind of balances that exist in terms of carbon dioxide and oxygen. And so plants have evolved on this planet, but they've also evolved the planet to suit themselves, if you like. As plants have evolved, as forests have evolved, they've created the atmosphere that we live in, and they've created it to suit themselves because it's an atmosphere that they can thrive in. And so when that atmosphere changes in some way that no longer becomes ideal for them, just through their natural processes, they are able to change that atmosphere and revert it back to where it should be for their benefit. And so that process will, you know, will happen eventually. So even if we put too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, plants eventually will draw it out and restore the balance, but it might take many thousands or hundreds of thousands of years to achieve that, by which time we've probably disappeared altogether.
were talking about your book about fossils. You've also written mostly about water or water-based things, and whales and kelp.
Oh.
But they're all sort of environmental things. What got you into that science communication around the environment?
I think I grew up. In the mountains of the South Island, and on a farm, and living amongst nature. And so I think I was always going to be drawn to writing and to writing about nature, and to learning about nature. And so I guess it's sort of been a natural progression. I guess I've always been fascinated by wild places and wanted to visit them. So that's really been a driving force of my life, and I've ended up being lucky enough to visit some amazing parts of the New Zealand coastline and see some amazing sights and write and make films about them.
What's next on the list?
I'm currently just working on lots of magazine stories and stuff, but I would like to write a book about New Zealand's southern right whale, Te Hora, which is an animal that I've had a lot to do with, and it has been a really driving force in my life in terms of wanting to understand them more and to learn more about them. So I've got a book I'd like to write related to them.
Is that a similar the science of book? Because just telling the story of telling the story is interesting.
Yeah, I think I want to apply a similar approach to my Gondwana book in terms of trying to tell the story of the evolution of Te Hora, and also in regards to the evolution of the Southern Ocean. So that's a work in progress.
How does one get into this kind of work? I might decide to write a book about whales, but I'm not, or make a film about whales, but I'm not going to get to go on a ship down to the Southern Ocean and do it.
Well, it took me 10 years to get down to the Southern Ocean, I guess it was just something that gnawed away at me, and I couldn't let it go, and I just had to look for every opportunity, and it did take me 10 years to find an opportunity to get down there. And that was through the University of Otago and Professor Steve Dawson, who gave me that chance to get down there. And so that, yeah, I guess it just took a lot of persistence and patience, or not so much patience, because I was as like I said, it did sort of eat away at me. That I just was something I really felt I needed, wanted to do. And so, when I finally got the opportunity, one opportunity led to another, and I ended up going down to the Southern Ocean three times to visit the southern right whales down there, and working with the BBC Natural History on one of those trips, which was an incredible experience. And I'm just so grateful and thankful to have had that chance.
Then I've been interviewed for television quite a few times, and the reporters normally turn up with the story pretty much written, and they just ask questions to get you to say what they've already got in mind. Did you go down to the Southern Ocean with a story in mind, or did it come to you in a splash when you were there?
A little bit of both, I suppose. We went down there, like I said, three times, and with different science crews, and each of them brought new perspective to the work that they were trying to do down there. Different kinds of understanding from here on the mainland, I've been lucky to talk at depth with Ramaree Stewart, who's probably New Zealand's foremost tohunga on whales and dolphins, and she's given me a huge amount of knowledge that she has about them as well. So just there's a lot of different perspectives, and things that I've been lucky to kind of draw on. And but yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, we probably did go down there thinking of a particular story that we wanted to tell in terms of the BBC shooting. And you know, we just were able to shoot what the shots that were that the crew needed for that.
Bill, we have so many students who struggle with what does the first sentence look like and what does the last sentence look like. What's your process
for writing a book, you mean?
Yeah.
Or writing anything?
Just writing anything.
Yeah. yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, I think the first. I think the first process is to understand your topic. So, you know, research and understand what you're trying to write about. So that's before you write anything, you should really spend the time to get to know it and what you're trying to write about, to research it, to understand your topic and understand the story that you want to tell. And then I think writing, like any creative process, I think there's an element of just kind of letting go required to do it successfully. And just so once you've got all that material and all that knowledge inside you, it's kind of like almost like not trying to overthink it and just sort of like put pen to paper or put hands to keyboards and just let it flow is what, you know, I guess this is what works for me. And it's, I mean, it may not work for everyone, but I guess it's that kind of not trying to overthink it too much, just let it flow, let the words come and let it flow out on the page. It'll be rough. It'll be embarrassing in places, and it'll be some of it will be utter rubbish. And so, but you got to just be prepared to like to accept that, and then you go back and refine it, and eventually you get what you want. Endings are tough, and knowing where you want to end can be difficult, can be tricky. You might not know where you want to end up when you start writing, and that's okay. You sort of have to just sometimes trust the process, and as you go through the story, an ending might present itself to you. If you know where you want to end, that's a really amazing place to start. If you know where your end point of your story is, that's pretty, you're pretty lucky. It won't always be like that. So yeah, I would say trust the process and launch into it and see where you end up. In terms of an ending, I think it's as you process all this information that you've got or you're trying to get out on the page, that you think about, you kind of have a sense of what is it that you want your reader to walk away with. What's the message? What's the key thought or idea that you want to leave your reader with, and that might give you some clue as to where you should end it.
Did you always know that this was where you were going in your life? Was this a driving thing in you from when you were a kid?
Oh, I've always been driven to write, yeah. I've always been fascinated by words. I've done a lot of songwriting as well, so I guess I was kind of really driven to write songs for a long time, all forms of writing, filmmaking, storytelling have always really appealed to me, I feel lucky to be able to make some kind of a living out of it now. Even though it's not the easiest way to make a living with words, but it's really rewarding, and I feel very lucky that I've managed to get to that kind of place.
That's a beautiful place to be. I was in a bookstore in Christchurch on the weekend looking for something to read, and found that Leonard Cohen had written a book, and I had no idea that Leonard Cohen wrote books. I loved his music, always loved his music. He was an extraordinary human being, and then it turns out he was also an author. So you're just Leonard Cohen. Writing music, writing books, telling stories, that's a beautiful way to make a living.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd compare myself with Leonard Cohen, but I it's Yeah, you know, creative work. Like, I just made some bad choices in life, basically. I now have to try and make a living out of three creative endeavors: filmmaking, writing. I don't even consider trying to make a living out of music, but yeah, not the smartest choices in life. I would say my advice to the kids is, you know, be accountants or something if you want to make some money. Like, I don't know if accountants make money or not, but yeah, but no, I think you know, it is possible. I think what I would say is it is possible to make a living doing creative work and to really and so if that's really what you're drawn to do, you should have a crack at it, you know.
Bubble, sprite of the forest of Orokinui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, ngā mihi aroa nui kia koutou, ko tahoa hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are, whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day, who you are. The triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last more than 3 years have been very tough, and it's so important that we give ourselves and each other the love, the time, the care, the compassion, the understanding, the empathy, the clarity, the support, the love that we all so richly deserve and innately can provide. And of course, for me, the living world is always a great comfort, as is being part of this show. So a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blown Bubbles team for having me. It's a great honour and a great pleasure to be with you all in this way. And of course, the show featuring my beautiful friend Bill Morris, of course, has got me thinking about beautiful friendships and how much they shape and inform our lives, how they restore our hearts, how they inspire us, how they allow us to see ourselves in new ways and different ways, and vice versa with all these beautiful relationships that we have. So when I worked at the aquarium many years ago now, possibly 18 years ago or something like that, Bill came to visit and he was making a movie about power at the time, and he needed to come and get some footage of all the various sea creatures. And so I met him, we had a wonderful time and got talking about lots of things, and eventually started playing music together and things. I've been very lucky to play music with him for many, many years now and be in lots of different bands together. And of course the takahia being together now for more than 10 years, and it's just been fantastic. So of course, for all of us, we have these friendships in our lives that are enduring, and we have these friendships in our lives that provide us with the foundation to understand ourselves and to grow and change and explore and really blossom and bloom in different ways. And I feel so grateful for these friendships and all the friendships in our lives. And I think innately that as a species, we would not have co-evolved with all life in an infinite web unless innately we had the capacity and the desire to be friends with all life, to be friends with ourselves, to be friends with the world around us, to be friends with the processes and the transformations in our lives, in our collective lives. And basing these shifts and changes on the notion of friendship, I think, is so helpful. If we can see the world around us as benevolent, as beneficent as our friend, this really serves to reframe and recalibrate our responses, our reactions to the things that are taking place around us. And of course, we are alive in a time of change and transformation. Many things are taking place that are very sad and that, you know, don't exemplify friendship. But if we can, in our own lives, as much as possible, encourage these positive, uplifting, encouraging, supportive relationships, if we can embrace the changes that are taking place, if we can allow ourselves to be friends with ourselves as we grow and change. And if we can be kind to ourselves through these changes, if we can be kind to each other through these changes and make friends with the world around us, I think this is a very positive and powerful shift that we can make in our own lives. I'm about to head off to see Harvey win Student of the Year for his arborism course, so that's fantastic. And again, making friends with the process of learning and making friends with the process of study and the process of working hard to achieve our goals is another great relationship and friendship that we can develop within ourselves. So I really hope for you, you're enjoying that process, and many new friends await us all, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
Thank you, Tahu. You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're with Bill Morris.
Bill, school and education is going through kind of yet another transformation at the moment, and what I've noticed over the last few years is that we're now starting to enable our kids to have more, what's the word, agency in choosing the education pathway, which is so good. So, because what is the point in learning physics if you want to do something where physics has got no relevance? And I really love that we're kind of heading in this direction. What can we do to support futures like yours? What are the key things that our kids need to learn in education to enable them to head in the same kind of direction that you have?
I think education should leave room for, I'm by far from an expert on education, but I think it should leave room for experimentation with, you know, and understanding that, it should leave kids room to try new things and to follow their interests. And I know that is where education is kind of heading these days, and that's, you know, I think that is great. I think it's also important that kids are given an array of education as well, in terms of things that are out there. I mean, I think there were subjects at school that I didn't like. I thought I didn't like, and I'm now fascinated by. So I'm glad that I was exposed to those subjects. You know, I wasn't really into science much when I was at school, but now I'm fascinated by science, and it's my whole life really. So I think it's good that kids should be really encouraged to follow their interests and to develop those interest, but it's also good to have an array of other subjects as well that they do get a taste of and some knowledge of, so that they can go back and revisit those later in life as their life journey changes and they become interested in new things. I think the teachers that inspired me were the ones that encouraged me to be open to the world and of creativity, and the open to the world of filmmaking and writing curious about to explore all the creativity that's out there and is constantly being poured out there, that there's being open to all that, I think is something that should be encouraged, and open to constantly learning, and that life is always just about learning more and more and more, and you never stop learning, and the school should just be the start of that. So I think school should be seen as the starting point for a lifetime of learning, and to really inculcate children with that idea that this is the start of a journey that you'll be on for the rest of your life, and you can take that in any way you like, really.
I like that. That is exactly my philosophy as well. It's the beginning of a lifelong journey of learning and knowing and ways of knowing and being, and a lifetime of curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, you know, that that is what drives me with my with everything that, with my work, and is that, you know, is being endlessly curious. And you know, if you're endlessly curious, then you're going to be endlessly, you're never going to be bored, because there's so much to learn.
With choosing the pathway you've chosen through life, the bad decisions, as you called it before, although I disagree and think you made an amazing decision, but where did the resilience come from that has kept you going through a really tricky, tricky life choice, really? How did you become this incredibly resilient person?
I don't know if I'm incredibly resilient, or I wouldn't call myself particularly resilient. I think there's a lot of people out there that are a lot tougher minded and driven than me. I think I've just been lucky in life. I've had opportunities in life that some people haven't had, and I've been lucky enough to be able to follow my passions in life. I've had a supportive family, and I've had supportive people around me, and I think I've just been lucky, really. But I guess it is hard, I have chosen some tough industries to be a part of in terms of making a living, I think in that sense, it's just like, you know, if you're really passionate about things that you do, then eventually the money will come. May never be big money, but it might be enough to allow you to make a living out of it, if you're really passionate about it, and if you keep going and you're driven to do what you do, then let your passion, don't be afraid to let your passions guide you, I suppose, in life is a good thought, because if you're truly passionate about something, you will do a good job of it, and things will snowball, and you will eventually build a life for yourself that's doing what you want to do if you work hard and aren't afraid to follow those passions.
That's a beautiful place to be.
I'm going to squeeze in the second of your music choices. Let's have Sam Cooke, A Change Is Going to Come. Why this one?
I just like Sam Cooke, really. Off the top of my head, it was a song I hadn't heard for a while. I think it's a beautiful song, and I just love Sam's voice and his beautiful, soulful music.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother.
say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there have been times that I thought I could last for long, but now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a but I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Bill, we're rolling into summer eventually. Summer means lots of music festivals and things. Are you out on the music circuit?
No, my wife and I have just have two little, very little children, so I'm not doing anything like that at the moment. Won't be going far from home. But having said that, we are going to WOMAD, so through the book, I actually got invited to be part of the WOMAD Festival, which was a surprise and really exciting, because I've always wanted to go to WOMAD and never really had any dream of going there as a musician, although that would have been great. But to be invited to go there and as a writer was a complete surprise, and really that'll be really fun. And so really looking forward to that, taking the family out there to be part of the festival.
So we should tell all aspiring musicians that the way to fame is to write a book about rocks.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, does it? But yeah. Well, and actually the funny thing was, I've actually been, with the Southern Right Whale footage that we got down there with the BBC, one shot of that ended up on the big screen at Glastonbury a few years ago. So I kind of feel like it was in the context of, they put a big thing, David Attenborough kind of thing on the big screen at the Glastonbury main stage, and one of our shots that we got in the Auckland Islands of a whale ended up on that screen. So I feel like in a kind of indirect way, I've also played Glastonbury.
Let's go with the questions to end the show. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
I think the biggest success I've had in the last couple of years is learning how to be a father and a partner to my wife. I think that's been the biggest success for me. Not easy, but it's so that's been the big challenge. Is learning to be to adapt to that family life aside from that and work, it's writing a book was, I feel very happy that I've done that, because that wasn't something I ever thought I could do. And I guess it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, Maweta, about the how to write and where to start and finish, because I never thought I could write a book. And I just thought I had the idea for the book and I knew it would be a great book. But I really thought in my heart that it would probably just be something that I took to the grave. That would have been a good book to have written, and it's a pity I never got the time to do it. And I got it. It wasn't until I got a deadline put upon me that I suddenly, because I got a publishing contract, that I suddenly had to write the thing. And I didn't know. And all I could do was just basically start and just keep going until it was done. And then I got to the end and realized, oh, that wasn't so hard. So, I think talking about writing and how to start and finish, I think it's just overcoming those mental barriers of you can actually do it. It's not something that's outside your ability to start and finish a project like that. That was a revelation to me that I could actually write a book. And that, because of course, gives you a lot more confidence to go and write another one.
So we're writing a book about these conversations. It's called Tomorrow's Heroes. What's your superpower?
My superpower?
Yep.
I think if I have a power, it's the ability to juggle a whole lot of stories at once. That's something that's I feel like I can do quite well is have a number of projects on the go at once and sort of keep them moving forward, which can be difficult at times and mentally draining, but one thing I think I'm reasonably good at.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Not especially, no. I'm not quite sure what the definition of an activist is. Of course, I'm deeply concerned about the state of the environment and doing things to better that. Especially around water quality and things, I have been moving into that space in my work a bit. Activist, learning more about how different people have different values around water quality and so forth, and how ways that we can kind of get people around the table talking and moving forward in a more productive way to get better outcomes for conservation and for the environment is something I'm really interested in and working towards. So I guess if that makes me an activist, I am, but I wouldn't have called myself that.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
I just enjoy everything about my working life and my personal life. I think there's just lots to live for, and I get a real kick out of telling stories and being creative, and I get a real kick out of working with people and developing relationships and having conversations and just thinking about the environment and nature and science and conservation there's so much that I'd like to keep doing and do that. There's never enough hours in the day, really.
So what's the biggest challenge or perhaps opportunity that you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
I have been working with conservation groups and trying to in the sphere of freshwater conservation, and so I think progressing that work to actually start to see some real changes on the ground and in our rivers and streams out there is something that I really would like to work towards this year.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Do I have any advice? Well, I heard some good advice the other day was if your toddler walks past you with if your toddler walks past you with a step stool, nothing good is going to happen. That's very true advice, and
thank you for that.
Bill, I love this in the description of your book, which I just bought just before the show started because, oh my gosh, it's exciting. But anyway, I love this. It's a story about the importance of imagination in science and the reasons that the journey towards understanding is sometimes more important than the destination. That is just beautiful and perfect. And it sounds like your journey through life has just been extraordinary so far. Super excited to see where you go from here. And thank you for making a commitment to sharing knowledge and exploring and helping people have the opportunity to see the world through your eyes. Thank you for sharing with us today, and all the best with the journey ahead.
thank you for having me on the show, and I really appreciate the opportunity to have a chat, and thank you very much.
Thank you
for joining us.
All right, ka kite.
Thank you.
Caribbean Kawita vibes. Do it right. Let the moonlight light up your night. Feeling nice. People are ready and the DJ's on fire.
La vida es un respiro que vale la pena tomar. Cuando yo la vivo, veo las aves en el cielo, las olas del mar. La brisa es como un beso y las frutas el néctar para saborear. Aromas del Caribe para compartir, para meditar. Cada amanecer, un nuevo aliento de vida en nuestro corazón. Todo por hacer, nada te frena, nada que perder. Toma mi mano en este viaje hermoso. Enciende la llama de tu alma esta noche. Vas a florecer.
Do it right. Let the moonlight light up your night. Feeling nice. Magical Caribbean Kawita vibes. Do it right. Let the moonlight light up your night. Feeling nice. People are ready and the DJ's on fire.
La vida es un respiro que vale la pena tomar. Cuando yo la vivo, veo las aves en el cielo, las olas del mar. La brisa es como un beso y las frutas el néctar para saborear. Aromas del Caribe para compartir, para meditar. Cada amanecer, un nuevo aliento de vida en nuestro corazón. Todo por hacer, nada te frena, nada que perder. Toma mi mano en este viaje hermoso.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, who are brought to you by Otago Polytechnic, Te Pūkenga. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find our archive as well on Facebook. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. This is Gwandana, Do It Right. I'm Samuel Mann at Otago Polytechnic, Te Pūkenga, with Mawira Karatai in Whakatane, and we've been joined from Kopatai Port Chalmers by Bill Morris. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show.
Let the moonlight light up your night. Feeling nice. Magical Caribbean Kawita vibes. Do it right. Let the moonlight light up your night. Feeling nice. People are ready and the DJ's on fire.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.